the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Mulhern, this is Global Denmark.
Welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. How do we give our students, our children, the tools to succeed both now but in an indeterminate future? That is one of the key questions I explore with Sandy McKinsey, director of Copenhagen International School, in this wide-ranging podcast. Sandy has been a school leader in China, the United States, the UK, and now as director of Copenhagen International School in Denmark. We discussed lots and lots of good stuff, including innovation in the educational sector. How do we prepare our students for the future with a focus on emotional intelligence skills, adaptivity, and overall health? Why was CIS created, and what is its reason for being now? How does the school work with aligning the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN? Why it is crucial to cultivate a global perspective, not only for expats, but for Danes? Diversity and inclusion, creating a winning culture when there's 90 countries represented in one organization? And experiences being an expat leader in Denmark, looking at the paradoxes of networking and what it means to integrate. Lots of good stuff. So without further ado, we give you Sandy McKinsey. We are back. I am here, not as always, with my co-host Ed Lay, because Ed actually has a day job and he is busy today and not able to attend, but I will do my best to hold down the fort. And we are here with today's guest of honor, Mr. Sandy McKinsey, the director of Copenhagen International School. Sandy, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me here.
How you doing?
Great, thanks, yeah.
You are here on a wonderful January day, ready for the next 4 months of winter ahead of you?
Yes, indeed.
Sandy, I want to dive right in. You run Copenhagen International School, I believe the biggest international school in Denmark.
That's correct, yeah.
Why was Copenhagen International School created, I believe, almost 60 years ago? And what is its reason for being today in the Danish society?
Yeah, absolutely. So Copenhagen International School was created so that Danes could have an international experience, an international education, an education through the medium of English, but also those families that were here, international families from the United States or the UK or other parts of the world, could continue their education in English. It started off small, a small institution that was within another school building, has moved many, many times, but now is housed in Nohaun in a fantastic facility with almost 1,000 students and remains as relevant today, if not more so, than it was 60 years ago, almost 60 years ago. So we now serve 80 different nationalities and globally mobile families, Danes who are returning from overseas, Danes who want their children to have an international education, an education through the medium of English, an international baccalaureate education, and of course families who are in Denmark for one reason or another, because they work for an embassy or they work for the UN or they work for an international company. So we believe that we're completely relevant today and help make Copenhagen an attractive city for international business and for globally mobile families.
I can see you, so you serve different types of families, both expats, what we call repats.
Yes.
And I guess Danes too, that want in more international education. How important is it for these global talent to have an international school option for their children?
Yeah, I think that it's hugely important for those people who move around the world with their business, move around the world with embassies, military, UN, those types of non-governmental organizations. Because for those families, they want their child to have a continuous education, and the best way for that to happen is through the International Baccalaureate. It's the, in my view, the very best pre-university qualification, the diploma program, and then also it's a curriculum that is used in international schools all around the world. And so, although each school has its own identity and its own ethos and its own vision, being able to continue with that curriculum, depending on regardless of whether they're in Tanzania or China or the United States or Denmark, really is important to those families. So
it gives them a peace of mind that despite their lives being in flux, there's a red thread going through their child's education.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as parents, we know there's nothing more important to us than our children's happiness and our children's education and our children's ability to go on and have a successful life. And so I think that, you know, for those employees, for those companies, having that confidence is super important to them.
Yes. I imagine because of the way it's structured that there is a lot of moving parts because people are coming in and out to different parts of the world. Yeah. How do you deal with that as an organization and also equipping the students to be able to adapt?
Yes, indeed. Our school is a transitional environment in many respects. We have our average length of stay of a student is probably about 3 years. So we've constantly got students joining us and leaving us. At winter break there, we probably had around 25 students leave and about 25 students join us. And so that's mid-year. And so you can see there that presents a challenge for the educational environment. One of the things we're very lucky with is that our teachers actually are not particularly transitional. We retain our teachers very well. So we're very lucky to have a dedicated, talented team of teachers who are very used to working with young people coming in and out in this transitional environment, are warm and welcoming, and are able to build on the prior knowledge, assess the prior knowledge that they've had, assess the prior experience that they've had, assess their language skills, because of course the English language skills vary hugely depending on where they're coming from and what their own cultural background is.
Right.
And so our teachers are skilled in helping those young people to assimilate, and people don't stay new very long in our environment. We welcome them, we have mentors, we have buddy families and so on to help them come in and become part of our caring community at Copenhagen International School very quickly.
You know, it's really interesting because in Denmark, one of the hallmarks of the Danish system is that students are in the same classroom from grade 0 to 9.
Yeah.
And there's very little turnover. We talk about pros and cons of that. And one of the things we see as a consequence is that Danes develop lifelong friendships with these students. On the flip side of that, by the time that expats come to Denmark, they have a very difficult time breaking into the friend group.
That's
because
correct.
It's a very closed circle. How do you see your model in terms of creating networks and moving in and out and being able to sustain relationships?
That's right. There is that real challenge. And we see the value, of course, in Danish society of that stable environment. And one of the challenges that we have for our young people is that they go through that grieving process of losing friends regularly. But what we like to do is we like to celebrate the fact that what our young people, our students, our globally mobile families have is a global network of friends and colleagues that they can then build on for the rest of their lives. And so although there's that challenge of losing friends often, in fact, we believe that the value and the flexibility and adaptability that is generated in our young people is definitely worth it. And we just have to manage that process as they go through it when they're at their most young.
2 points there. I heard you say we talked to them about the grieving for the loss.
Yes.
And also flexibility and adaptability. When we look at the future of work and educating students for the future and the social and emotional skills that are needed, are these not two things that have to be there? Emotional intelligence to be able to deal with loss and adaptability.
That's absolutely correct. You know, when we think about the world of work 40 years ago, maybe where people were entering one workplace and getting a gold watch 30 or 40 years later, we know that today's society and today's economy, that's not the workplace that the young people that we're educating right now will be going into. In fact, we don't necessarily know what types of jobs those young people will be going into. What I think we do know are some of the skills that they will require. They will require flexibility and adaptability. They will require resilience and grit. They will require emotional intelligence. They will require international and intercultural understanding. Mm. And so those are some of the things that we're trying to develop in our young people, that they really do understand that people do come from different cultures. People do have different value sets. They can navigate those different languages and different cultures well, and that they can be flexible and that they will have resilience, that they will embrace failure and see it as learning rather than see it as an obstacle to progress.
When we talk about the importance of being emotionally intelligent, whether it's in leadership or students, we look at having self-understanding, but also the ability, the crucial ability to self-regulate.
Yes.
How do you work with that in the curriculum?
So our curriculum is very inquiry-driven. We believe that that inquiry-driven curriculum develops independence in young people. So I've worked in very different formats and curricula in different schools around the world. And I think that some other curriculum might drive forward the content faster than the International Baccalaureate curriculum does. But being inquiry-based means that young people develop a much deeper understanding of what it is that they're studying. And so I think that that develops an independence and the ability to collaborate with their peers that is super important for them going forward into the workplace.
Okay, I'm hearing a lot of synergies then with what we know in the Danish national curriculum in terms of it being, you know, inquiry-based and collaborative learning.
Yes.
And I think sometimes when Danes hear about international curricula, they think rigid testing in this kind of old school model, but that's not what I'm hearing from you.
No, definitely not. So I've worked in the UK, I've worked in the British system, I've worked in the United States, and I've worked here in Denmark. And I think that our international curriculum, our collaborative style, is much more synergistic indeed with Danish culture than it was, for example, when I was working in Shanghai and in China. You know, our curriculum is about independence, is about developing skills, and is about collaboration and communication, rather than testing, standardized testing, which of course is particularly popular in the United States and in the national system there,
yeah.
Or that very rigid view of education that's very content driven that we see maybe in some parts of Asia. So indeed, no, in our international baccalaureate curriculum, we're developing inquiry, we're developing collaboration, independence of thought, rather than that very rigid way of looking at education.
Hmm. It makes sense when I'm hearing this, because if we look at the future of work being so indeterminate, these skills seem to be able to translate in any market.
Well, that's right. And I think that the rate of change that we see in the world only is increasing. And therefore, you know, it's harder for us to predict what the world will look like in 20 years. I was in Copenhagen and working in the same school, in fact, 15
right.
years ago.
This is your second tour of duty.
This is my second tour of duty, indeed. And lovely to be back and a great privilege to lead this school. But 15 years ago, you had asked me what the world would look like.
Mm.
You'd asked me what Copenhagen International School would look like. You asked me what Copenhagen and Denmark would look like. I would not necessarily have been able to predict. And that's what we're trying to do with our 3-year-olds and our 4-year-olds and our 5-year-olds, about predicting the types of skills they will require when they go to university.
Mm-hmm.
Will university look the same as it is now? And, of course, into the workplace, which is probably more like 20 years away for them. And so it's important for us to recognise that and realise that the world is changing and that rate of change continues to increase. Therefore, let's look at what skills it is that we believe that they will require rather than what content they require. Because I think that, you know, in comparison to the 1970s and 1980s when I was at school, the content is much less important. We can find the content on the internet,
right.
But those human skills
yeah.
are vitally important for the future of organizations and the future of our world.
We read a lot these days, also in Denmark, about increased anxiety, depression, stress among students. Personally, I'm a big advocate of mindfulness in terms of mindfulness stress reduction. Is that something you're looking at in the schools in terms of modes of reducing stress and kind of calming the amygdala and getting into the prefrontal cortex?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at all of those brain research aspects. And another thing that we're very lucky about in our school is that we have counselors in all parts of the school, primary school, middle school, and high school. So we've got well-trained teachers and we have dedicated specialist counsellors working with our students and with our families. Because yes, we do indeed see an increase in anxiety in young people. We do see more mental health issues. possibly, because we're more aware of them. We've, as I say, got trained teachers. We do work with our young people, with our families and with our teachers to recognise signs of stress, to recognise signs of anxiety, to talk about ways to combat all of those things. But I would say that we do see that young people now have a greater pressure on their shoulders than they did 20 years ago. And that rate of progress in the world, including the availability of information, which we enjoy and we embrace through technology and through the internet, might be fantastic for many things, but I think it also brings a level of adultness, if that's a word, to young people much earlier than it used to happen.
Okay.
And with that, I believe, comes some anxiety, some responsibilities that maybe come earlier, and some awareness that comes earlier, some of which can lead to mental health issues in young people.
The way I look at it then is the earlier that the school can tackle it, you know, all the way down in the preschool ages, while the neurons and the neural connections are being formed, that can be a preventative measure.
That's absolutely right, and that's something that we're doing, and we stress the importance of health and well-being right across the school.
Excellent. I want to pivot a little bit to how your school aligns with the Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah.
And we see this explosion in the corporate sector that the SDGs are not just part of the CSR initiative, but they're being merged into core business.
That's right.
Is this being merged into core curriculum?
Yes. So our vision for the school, the vision statement, is educating champions of a just and sustainable world. We believe that every young person in the world, every child in the world, was able to attend a school like Copenhagen International School, that the world in 10 and 20 and 30 years would be a much better place and a much more just world and a much more sustainable world. We're trying to educate champions thereof, people that will actively make a difference to society, will actively make a difference to our world to make it more just and more sustainable. So those sustainable development goals are completely aligned with what we are trying to do in the school. And of course, we know that Copenhagen, as a city, is looking at the horizon of 2030 in particular, and to become ever increasingly more sustainable. Right now at the school, we're undergoing a process of developing a new five-year strategic plan.
Okay.
We had, as we've already talked about, you know, developed our school from small beginnings and then moved and moved. And then only a few years ago, we were in two campuses. And then 3 years ago, we moved to this brand new campus in Nottingham. So we moved house and had all of the teething troubles and moving into a brand new house that entails. Now that we're bedded into our fantastic facility there, we're looking at the next 5 years and saying, what do we need to focus on now? So we're doing a lot of stakeholder engagement right now with our staff, with our students, with our parents, with our board, with some of the companies and organisations that employ our parents. And what we're hearing are the different themes, and that's the point we're at the moment, the different themes that people believe are vital for us moving forward as a school. And one of those, we believe, will be sustainability in action. How can we be sustainable as a school? How will we ensure that as a school we're around in 20 or 30 years' time being successful? How can we make sure that we are helping young people be sustainable in everything that they do? And of course, how can we make sure that we're making our world and our local environment more sustainable too? So those SDGs will inform that strategic plan and be completely aligned with it. And then we believe that that sustainability thread will be weaved through our curriculum and our learning experiences too.
That's very exciting. And I know that Denmark has this hugely ambitious 2030 goal in terms of being carbon neutral. I mean, it sounds like you have an ambitious five-year goal ahead of you where you really want to be maybe a flagship for other schools.
Yes, absolutely. And have that sustainability thread through our curriculum, but also in the way that we organise ourselves. And so, you know, when you see the fantastic facility we have in Nottingham, you can see that we have the whole building is covered in solar panels, for example.
Okay.
And that helps us to be more sustainable.
Yeah.
We have measures that can make our building sustainable. So, for example, we have it built into the building that we could use rainwater for flushing toilets and so on. Now, right now, there's a law that says that we're not allowed to use that, so it's not connected. But when that law changes, we're ready to have that measure in our building.
That's very exciting. Well, I look forward to following along and seeing how that goes. And obviously, you're a school that's blessed with resources, indeed. And I can hear that you want to use those to be a champion for change.
Definitely. We're very lucky. We have a fantastic building. We're very lucky. We have an amazing community. And so we've got plenty of resources, and we want to make the very best use of those for our community and for the local community and the wider Copenhagen community.
Why is cultivating a global perspective crucial for the future of work and for all students in the society? And I'm asking this specifically because I've noticed a lack of internationalization within the Danish educational sector in comparison with other countries and cultures. Maybe you could speak a little bit to the importance of that perspective.
Yeah, I think that we're an international baccalaureate school, and the vision and the mission of the international baccalaureate is to create a better and more peaceful world through intercultural understanding and respect. And we are, of course, in our school, completely aligned with that mission and vision. And we believe that the world is becoming ever more interconnected. And for young people going into the workplace, having relationships across in their adult life, that they will be meeting people from all sorts of cultures. And having that intercultural understanding, that global perspective, is vital for their success and for their happiness, and for the success and happiness of this world. You know, we're becoming more and more crowded on this planet. The planet's not getting any bigger, and the resources are not getting any greater, and we're using them up at a greater rate. And so having empathy and understanding of the impact that we have on other people is vital. So having that global perspective, I believe, is vital for the future of small communities, of countries, and for our planet.
So fundamentally, it's about empathy.
Absolutely. I think that empathy is a vital skill that is required for all people, and particularly for those globally minded and globally mobile people.
Let's pivot a little bit to diversity and inclusion.
Yeah.
I've spoken with a lot of people. I work with it myself in my organization. We know that the data shows that diversity not only is positive in terms of having a growth mindset and development, but it's also good for the bottom line for companies and organizations. How do you, in such a diverse organization, leverage that cognitive diversity and create a culture of inclusion?
We are just so incredibly lucky. It's one of the unique aspects to our school that we have over 80 different nationalities in our school. We've got many nationalities in our staff, and of course our parent body. And that just allows for these different perspectives to be brought to young people's education. Mm. As an organization, I think that that's very attractive to people when they are looking for a job. I think it's very attractive to our parents. And I think that for our students, that they learn a huge amount just by being in a diverse environment. Of course, diversity also creates challenges. That's where inclusion comes in. It's more difficult to work in a multicultural environment than it is in a monocultural environment, because there's the potential for misunderstandings and a requirement for greater empathy and understanding. But I think that makes it much more of a rich experience for everybody involved.
How do you create the psychological safety for diverse stakeholders to feel like they have a voice?
Yeah, I think that that psychological safety is hugely important, that it's totally acceptable to have a different perspective. And again, that's something that the IB talk about in terms of their mission and vision, that they're trying to develop active, compassionate, lifelong learners who understand that other people with their differences can also be right. And that's something that is a thread in our school, that's part of the ethos of our school, that throughout our community, whether that's in our parents or our staff or our students, that we accept difference, we include difference, we embrace difference, we celebrate difference, yeah. And that we create that psychological safety and emotional safety in young people, that each person can be themselves, can develop their identity, and will be accepted and celebrated for that identity.
And you've been a school leader in the United States, China, over in the UK, and now in Denmark. Do you see differences in terms of the dominance of the local culture and how that affects your organizational culture?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when we look at the different factors of national culture, right, if we build on something like Meyer's work or Hofstede's work on national culture, what I find is that in Denmark, for example, with the low uncertainty avoidance, the low power distance, using some of those factors that Hofstede would work using his work, that's very consistent with the work of the International Baccalaureate, with the ethos of our school here in Copenhagen. When I was in Shanghai in China, the school that I was working in, which was a British school, international school, but also had the International Baccalaureate Diploma, the culture of the school was quite different to the culture of the city and the culture of the country. And so it became much more of a bubble and cut off, if you like, from the local community, rather than what we have here in Copenhagen.
Do you think a bubble is beneficial or counterproductive?
Well, I guess that's partly about how permeable the bubble is.
Let's talk about the bubble's permeability.
Indeed.
We talk about this a lot in the expat bubble, right?
Yes, indeed. You know, and so I think that, indeed, it depends on the nature of that bubble. Is it a completely closed-off environment? And I'm thinking about, for example, the school that I was in China, and it very much was an environment that was very different from its local community, rather like an embassy could be within a city, where it's part of something very, very different from its local environment. Whereas I think that it's great to be able to create a culture, an organizational culture within a school, which is maybe distinct from the local education system or distinct from its local environment, but can embrace the very best parts of its local environment. So I think that it's important to be very clear about one's own identity as a school, with ethos and values, being very clear about what we deliver and authentic to that. But I think also that we want to embrace the local community as much as possible. And that's partly why I love being here in Copenhagen. It's just such a great city, and we're very fortunate with what we have.
I agree with you on that, absolutely. I think that dovetails into your own personal experience being an expat leader. You're from Edinburgh, I believe.
Yes.
Here in Denmark. We talked a little bit off air about some of these paradoxes that you and I both noticed. And kind of to the last question, the ability to integrate seems to be very difficult. And we just talked about the bubble, but let's say that you have global families that want to be open. It seems like that there's kind of this dichotomy here in Denmark between either fully assimilate into the local culture or stay in your bubble. But this middle way, where you're talking about the permeable bubble and coming out of it, seems to be quite difficult. I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that we see that in our own staff, who are international staff who come to Copenhagen for one reason or another. Many of whom who come for love, some who come for the job.
Guilty.
Yes, indeed. and so what we find is that Denmark and Copenhagen is an incredibly open city. It's a multicultural city. It's a cosmopolitan city. One can walk around Copenhagen, go out for dinner, go out and meet people and speak English only and be accepted and be able to navigate the city well and be welcomed, in fact. And so there is that maybe illusion or air of it being incredibly cosmopolitan and welcoming and easy to assimilate. However, I think that those of us who have lived in Denmark for a while as expats know that there is a limit to that. That hits a buffer at some point unless you really begin to assimilate into the local culture. And it's really fascinating to see a country where so many people, I mean 90-odd% of people have excellent English skills, still require Danish language skills for you to fully assimilate. And I think that that's something that we should learn as in our international environment at Copenhagen International School with our staff and with our students, that it's, you know, language and culture, they're so bound together And it's really important to show willing, at very least, to learn some language to be able to really break through the possibly slightly permeable barrier of the bubble into Danish society.
Another kind of paradox we talked about off air was this notion of rules.
Yeah.
That on the one hand, there's a huge emphasis on personal freedom, and the other, there seems to be dozens, if not hundreds, of unwritten rules that govern the behavior of being in Denmark.
I think that's fascinating too. And again, when I compare my experiences of living in Shanghai in China with the United States, with Copenhagen, very different with regard to personal freedom and with regard to rules. It seems to me that Denmark has this very fascinating combination of high stress on personal freedom. People should be allowed to have free speech, very different to China. People should be allowed to have whatever lifestyle they choose. People should be allowed to develop their own identity and be proud of that identity and openly express it. Yet, here in Denmark, people really are rule-based and rule followers. And we see that, for example, that we don't have fences around the water in Copenhagen. We don't have people, the way that traffic is organized with pedestrians, cyclists and cars in the center of Copenhagen, the way it works, means that by following rules, people remain safe.
I think from everything I'm researching and talking to other people who are much smarter about this, is that it's all rooted in trust. This incredible level of trust in Denmark, which is kind of the byproduct of a monoculture having a shared set of rules from a very early age.
True indeed, and that's, trust is something that's high in Denmark as a dimension, which is superb as a society, and something, as you say, which is easier to generate in a monoculture. So trust is something that we are working on explicitly at Copenhagen International School with our 80 different nationalities and ensuring that we generate and regenerate and retain trust in us as an organisation. Because if one thinks of it as a parent, entrusting the thing in their lives which is most precious to them, their child, to a school is a big level of trust. And we ask from parents a high degree of trust, and we must demonstrate why those parents should trust us.
Yes. One final question before the break. I have spoken to IB directors and also admissions officers at Danish universities. And there are some rules about accepting the Danish students based on their diploma qualification. They get easier admission than perhaps an IB diploma. And from everything we're talking about, it sounds a bit absurd to me, knowing the quality of education. What is this rooted in, and is this factually correct?
So I think that's a fascinating question that we could probably talk about for about an hour in itself. I think that you're absolutely correct that Danish universities still have some form of different playing field for those students who are coming from a Danish gymnasium and those who are coming with an IB diploma. And to some degree, one can understand that from a small country that is wanting to promote its own national system of education.
Mm.
However, what my experience of being an educator for the last 25 years is, and being involved in the IB world in the UK and in the United States, is that I see that universities really value the graduates that come with an IB diploma. The young people that have 18 and 19 years old that enter their university are able to communicate well, are able to collaborate well, have got research skills, have got a level of independence and maturity about them that they may not find from the UK national system of education or the US or maybe from the Danish. And what I think we've seen as a direction since the 1960s when the IB began and Copenhagen International School was one of the founding members of the IB, is that universities value that style of education more and more and more. And we're seeing that in Copenhagen, we're seeing that in Denmark, that the universities here do value those students with an IB diploma. And so I think we're seeing that playing field being more and more equal, and those universities bringing down their expectations in terms of points and qualifications for entry.
Well, Sandy, that is an issue I'm willing to help fight with you in terms of giving equal opportunity, and I think it's an absurdity. I think it should be merit-based and open for everyone.
Absolutely.
On that note, we are going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsors, and we will be back to finish out the podcast today with our quick fire round.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
We are back. I am here with today's guest, Mr. Sandy McKenzie. Sandy, you ready to dive into the quickfire round?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. What habits, routines, or rituals do you do every day to stay mentally and physically sharp?
Well, I'm not sure that it keeps me physically sharp to drink a lot of coffee, but it seems to be the way that I get through the day. I do think, though, that the importance of exercise has become more and more clear to me with the advancing decades. And of course, as a teenager and somebody in their 20s, that fitness just was natural. But I think that having regular exercise is definitely important. And having worked in very different countries like Shanghai and a city like Atlanta in the United States, where everything is car-based, coming to Copenhagen and not having a car and cycling to work every day and being out in the fresh air on a daily basis, I find has really helped my physical fitness and my physical well-being, but also my mental well-being.
You can feel a real effect.
Absolutely.
And your energy and how you're feeling overall.
If I compare living in Shanghai, where, of course, pollution became a real factor for me, where I was waking up regularly with headaches, then to Atlanta, where just by the way that the city is constructed, you have to use a car to make most journeys, to then moving to Copenhagen, I can really feel a difference in the way that I feel about myself, both mentally and physically.
It must have an effect, too, on the students in terms of their well-being and performance. You know, the cleaner air, the lighting, you know, everything about the infrastructure.
Absolutely. You know, in Shanghai, we had to battle the pollution on a daily basis. We had to make daily decisions around whether we were having physical education outside, sport outside, or not. In Atlanta, there was a real lack of independence for young people because they were dependent on their parents picking them up or driving them places until they could then drive themselves. Whereas here, we're very fortunate with the school building that we have, but also just the local environment in Copenhagen, where young people have great resources, but also the ability to get outside on a daily basis.
Have you ever undergone any one event or experience that you would attribute to a huge leap forward in the person or leader you've become?
So I think that when people have significant events in their life that make them go forward, funnily enough, or ironically enough, often they're negative events. Mm. And I became a father when I was fairly young. I was in my early 20s, and my youngest daughter was diagnosed with kidney cancer when she was one. And so as a parent of 25 years old, I had a child who was facing significant illness with a prognosis of 75% chance of 5-year survival. And she underwent surgery and chemotherapy and radiotherapy and a treatment regime of about a year. She's now 22 years old in university and has lived in China, the United States, and Scotland, and is doing extremely well. And I think that that was a turning point in my life from, as I say, I was relatively young, relatively immature as a parent, and had to grow up very, very quickly through that experience. And it made me appreciate many things. It made me appreciate family relationships. It made me appreciate the concept of loss, potential loss. It made me appreciate science and the breakthroughs that we have made through scientific research. Because if that had happened 20 years before, when I was her age, I think that the chance of survival would have been more like 15 or 20%. And whereas by the time she was 1 year old, it was 75%. And as I say, she's now a successful, well-functioning adult.
That's
Thank you for sharing that story. That's as a father to a young daughter and an uncle to my nephew, who just he's a cancer survivor, but he's had cancer at age 5. That's just enduring that.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that's how tough that is. What personality trait do you kind of battle with the most yourself in terms of achieving ultimate performance? For me, I can give an example.
Sure.
I battle being all or nothing in my thought processes. When I believe in something and feel passionate, I'll go all in. But if it doesn't reach that threshold, I don't want to waste time on it.
Right.
Instead of having this balanced approach. So I really wrestle with that and work on it constantly.
Sure. You know, I'm an educationalist. I've been in education for over 20 years. I believe in the potential of young people, and I believe that it is our duty as educators to look after, to care for, to develop the talents of every young person that's in our community. And so therefore, I'm very passionate about that. I'm very idealistic, one might say. And so the flip side of that is that I can get very frustrated when we're not successful, when we are not giving our all. And so I battle with bridling that sometimes. Mm. And as a director of a school with 950 students and almost 200 staff, there are times where we have differences of opinion or we have disappointments. And what I battle with in terms of my self-regulation is holding back that reaction and that response. And sometimes my face gives away what I'm thinking or feeling in terms of that disappointment.
But you're mindful of it and you're working on that.
Absolutely. And it's important to be balanced and to listen very much before making judgments. And so that's something that as a 47-year-old, I'm better at than I was when I was 27.
It's good to know that there's hope. What is something weird about you?
I think that, you know,
behavior or talent?
Well, we've been talking about rules and how Denmark is quite rule-based and yet this paradox with personal freedom. And I think that when one thinks of a director of a school, or to use a more traditional term, a headmaster, one thinks of someone who generates the rules, somebody who upholds the rules all the time. And so I think an irony about me is that I'm not particularly a good rule follower, and yet here I am being the figurehead of an organisation that is often considered to be quite rule-based itself at school.
That's perfect. So you can empathise with the boys when they're waiting outside your office ready to talk to you?
Well, indeed, yes. Pushing the envelope is something that, as a school, we actually encourage. And so there's another irony in a school like Copenhagen International School, where we really are trying to develop young people's independence of thought, critical thinking skills, and so on. And so we want them to challenge the status quo.
Yes.
We want them, therefore, to challenge us. And so there's a balance to be struck there.
Indeed.
That we accept their challenges, and that there is psychological safety and emotional safety to challenge that status quo while still being an active and contributing member of our community who follows our norms.
That's, I think you fit right in Denmark then, because that's one of the things I've experienced a lot, is challenging authority, challenging beliefs as a both in the educational sector, but also in the work cultures in Denmark. It's really interesting. If you were invited to a dinner party,
yes,
you could invite two people from history, alive or dead. Who would it be and why?
Gosh, that's a difficult question, isn't it? And I always worry about answering that type of question, because by choosing two people, you exclude the rest of the world. So I'm a huge Prince fan. Prince is my musical idol.
Okay.
Saw him 4 times in concert, and in fact was lucky enough to be at his final concert in Atlanta 1 week before he died.
Oh, wow.
Which was an amazing experience on the night, but of course 7 days later felt like an even more fortunate moment to be able to see him at that stage. Yeah. And I think that he was a musical genius. Not an easy character, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think quite a complex human being. but I think probably fascinating. And let's face it, if you're at a dinner party with them, as long as there was some sort of musical instrument there, there would definitely be entertainment.
He's good.
So I think that he would be a very entertaining dinner guest. And then I think I would, from today's world, choose Greta Thunberg. Mm. Because I think that she is such an amazing role model for young people. There's somebody who is breaking generational norms. There she is standing in front of presidents and prime ministers and political leaders and business leaders and making them sit up and listen and take action. Somebody who's not an adult yet and to boot is, of course, female. And I think that if you're giving me only two guests, I would certainly want diversity. I want generational diversity. I want racial diversity. I want gender diversity.
Now we're talking.
And I think that having both of those together would be fascinating. But I really do think that while one might not agree with every single word that comes from her mouth, I think that she has shown young people that they can, in fact, have an impact and make a difference by small actions which can turn into bigger actions. And of course, climate change and sustainability are probably this generation's greatest challenges.
And do you see that reflected in your school with this Gen Z outlook towards climate change and what Greta's?
Absolutely. And you know, it's fascinating being the leader of a school that has staff who come from probably three different generations and we're educating two other generations.
Yeah, right, you have the alphas coming up.
Yes, indeed, they're coming to school now. And I think we do see a completely different perspective from those Generation Z young people in comparison to some of us Xers, that climate change, sustainability are really important to them. Diversity and inclusion are really important to them. And those things are prerequisites for them in terms of values, in terms of what they're looking for from their school, looking for from future workplace. So they're really very passionate and they want to make a difference and they believe in the ability to make a difference.
Do you have a quote, value or principle that helps you in times of difficulty make decisions?
Yeah, do I have a soundbite that I could give? I'm not so sure. One of the things I was very fortunate about my experience when I worked in Atlanta was that in our community there, Martin Luther King Jr.'s son was one of our parents. And so, in fact, Dr. King's only grandchild was a student at the school. And so I had the opportunity to meet them as a family, the opportunity to work in that space in Atlanta with racial diversity and some of the inequalities that happened, you know. And I think that having somebody that grew up in Scotland, has lived in Copenhagen, it's completely alien to me and to many of my peers, this concept of racial injustice that existed and to some degree still exists in somewhere like Atlanta as recently as the 1960s. I think that, therefore, when I experience the stories and listen to the stories from that time and from today, quite frankly, it's amazing to me that Dr. King was able to lead people in that non-violent way, to give a quote to say that the only way to drive out hate is through love.
You've been a teacher. I guess you always will be a teacher when you're a teacher. But did you have a teacher or mentor growing up that had a profound influence on you?
You know, it's funny, again, here I am leading a school, and I wouldn't say that my own school days were particularly as happy as they could have been. And
that's very normal, though. You know, right. A lot of the leaders we talk to, it's breaking out of boxes is key to innovation.
Absolutely. You know, I want every young person that attends Copenhagen International School to have a fantastic experience and a happy one. And therefore, I want them to have a better educational experience than maybe I had when I was 15 or 16 years old. I grew up with three mothers. It's a long story, but...
That's another episode.
Yeah, that's maybe another episode in itself. But my mother was a single parent, and I didn't really have a father figure in my life, but she had two friends who were sisters who then kind of became co-parents. And so I found that I was very fortunate that as a young person growing up to have this excellent role modelling from strong women, strong independent women in my life. And I would say that if anybody was a mentor to me, it was those three women. And I think that it has allowed me to be able to communicate and collaborate in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do if I hadn't been mentored in that way.
What book or books have you most gifted or been influenced by?
You know, I feel like as a director of a school, I should give a really intellectual answer to that question. And I think I'm going to give a relatively non-intellectual answer by saying the Harry Potter series. I think that, I mean, I'm Scottish and, you know, J.K. Rowling began writing in Edinburgh and so on. But really what I think that those books did was imbue a love of reading in many young people. And for me, that's really, really important. Sure, they're a great story. They're a great story about how love can conquer hate, how love can overcome all sorts of dark forces, and how friendship and family are super important. And as well as being a good story, I think that just the fact that it inspired many young people at a time when reading was becoming less and less fashionable to pick up a book and start enjoying literature, I think makes them really something magical indeed.
Do you see the Harry Potter series, but also the love of reading in general at the school? Has it changed? Is everybody just reading through Kindle? Are books still a thing?
Books are still a thing. We have a library. In fact, this morning I was reading to our fifth grade, and you know, those young people were really fascinated by the illustrations and by the physical form of a book. And I think that there's something special about that. The tangibility of holding the book still has something that we have not quite managed to recreate on the screen yet. Sure, we see young people reading less and less and looking at screens more and more, but we still see that the physical form of a book is pretty special.
I completely agree. Just last night I was watching on my iPad the impeachment trial of Donald Trump. There, I got my Donald Trump in. But then I put it down and I read a good night story for my daughter, a Dr. Seuss book.
Nice.
And I thought about it. I'm like, this is something that is timeless. And there's just a different level of joy in the whole experience of reading a physical book and being a part of that and looking at the illustrations. I just think it's, and I can imagine doing it in 50 years. There's something there in the human experience.
There definitely is. And we see young people, very young people, toddlers, with iPads in their hand and so on. And I think that the young people that are coming to school now, the Generation Alpha, will embrace technology all their lives. But I would hate to see that books themselves or reading disappear altogether.
Right there with you. Well, we're going to finish out the podcast today with one final question, which we ask to all of our guests. And now it is your turn. What do you think Denmark can teach the rest of the world, and what can Denmark learn from the rest of the world?
Fascinating question. I think that, you know, here we are in this most wonderful city. Copenhagen embraces modernity and yet holds on to its traditions. And that's true of Denmark, a very small country really on the global stage, yet has a very definite identity. And Danes have a very definite identity and are proud to have so, and proud of their culture, and everything works in this country. You know what, it's a happy country according to the indexes. It's a country that its social structures and infrastructure works tremendously well. So I think that Denmark could teach so many other countries and other parts of the world something there, holding on to identity, making it work despite not having the might of large-scale economy. And I think that the flip side of that is maybe what Denmark can learn, is that openness to intercultural understanding and really being fully open to learning from other cultures and from other countries about different ways of doing things.
Thank you for that. Before we go, is there anything you'd like to promote or maybe tell our audience where they can find you or the organization you're running?
You can absolutely find me in Copenhagen International School, just behind the front door in Nordhavn. We're really very lucky to have a fantastic facility overlooking the water with a diverse community of 80 different nationalities and an international baccalaureate curriculum with fantastic staff and community. You'll be very welcome to come and visit us anytime.
So, and then I guess you have, of course, a website and social media presence that people can follow.
Absolutely. You can find us on LinkedIn. Our website, cis.dk, has lots of information.
Sandy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave a rating or a review to help our podcast continue to grow. And until next time, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.